well. Damn. Bitch, you guessed it.
You was right.
Bitch, you guessed it. Glah, glah. Fuck nigga on sight. Bitch, you guessed it. Still in that place.
Welcome to the Ferguson Response Network podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack, and you are joining us for a very special episode of the Ferguson Response Network podcast called Bitch, You Tried It, because it seemed like everybody in America was trying it this week. We are, of course, a weekly podcast devoted to supporting citizens working to create a lasting social change through sustained civil disobedience and civic action. And I'm joined, as always, by my awesome co-host, Ricky L. Hines II. Hey, Ricky, how's it going?
Hey, Leslie. This is this has been a week.
It sure has. Now, normally we have like a theme to the show and all that stuff, but I told you we just discussed a couple days ago, we're just going to do an all new show, and I'm just going to call it Bitch, Y'all Tried It. That's it. That's the name of the episode, because everybody tried it this week. Usually I go through a whole spiel about, you know, you being a Los Angeles native, U.S. Navy veteran, avid blogger and Googler and founder of the Americans United Again movement. But I'm going to throw it to you because you have some exciting AUA news to share. So hit us with it.
I do. We finally have the Americans United Again app. And right now it's available on Android phones or Android devices via the Amazon App Store. And you can I'll post a link to where you can get it on the website, auamovement.org. But it should be available for iTunes next month and on the Google Play Store probably by the end of this month, if not early next month. It allows you to listen to both of our podcasts. It'll actually allow you to listen to this one as well. There's an entire Black Lives Matter section. So, you can find links to different organizations. You can, find links to the Ferguson Response Tumblr, FergusonResponse.org, our blog, our Facebook page, our Twitter. It's so all inclusive. I'm really proud of it, of the job I did. I'm not saying that just because, you know, I'm full of myself. Like I'm satisfied with the app. I am, and I think people will enjoy it.
Yes, I've heard nothing but good things. So I'm excited, and we'll put that link on the show notes as well. And the two podcasts that Ricky mentioned is the Americans United Again podcast, and he also co-hosts with the lovely Sherelle the AUA Hope podcast. When's that coming out next? Anyways, y'all working on that soon?
We are. That should be, we're actually recording tomorrow. So, should be the middle of this week that it's out.
Excelente. If this is your first time listening to this show, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or the AUA, app that you can get on Android now as well. Just search Ferguson Response Network. You can also find us on our website, FergusonResponse.org. And if you're looking for Black Lives Matter actions in your area or would like to list your action planning, you can go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com. I'm also super excited today because one of my nearest and dearest friends, my college roommate, my ABC, my road dog, she was in my wedding. She's just like awesome, generally speaking. Miss Tia Marr is with us. What's up, T?
Hey, Leslie, or as I call you, Butler.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
What's up? So Tia is a Northwestern University grad of 1997. She is a high school teacher in the Chicago suburbs for 18 years. She's been a dean for 4 years, and she's passionate about implementing programs for at-risk youth. And like I said, she's just all around awesome person. So we are excited to have her here on the show.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. Yes. Like Ricky said, a long list of stuff that went down this week.
Lord. I went away for a couple days. Very white guy and I took a little quick trip to the Midwest, visited a couple people, and came back to three hashtags and, you know, a full fraternity blow up and all sorts of other fuckery basically going on. So I guess we'll start with the, you know, 4 days, three hashtags. I guess we could start with Tony Hill in Atlanta, Georgia. You know, honestly, The thing that gets me about all of these things is, like, I'm really sick of all these hashtags. We actually did an episode a couple of weeks ago about hashtag hangover, because we just are kind of like over it. I'm sick of every 28 hours somebody else mm-hmm. being killed. But Tony Hammond, this man was naked, clearly having a mental break.
Mm-hmm.
And the police response was to kill him. There's so much wrong with this on so many levels. And I read a quote from a nurse that said, as a nurse, I deal with larger than me, mentally broken individuals on a daily basis. And never do I have the inkling that the proper way to deal with them is lethal force.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a trained professional law enforcement officer and a naked unarmed man clearly having a problem mentally scares you enough that the only way to deal with him is to kill him, I think you're in the wrong line of business.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Didn't they say he also had a taser gun on him? I don't understand
why. The gun had a taser function on it.
Okay.
Not just, like, let that sink in. Instead of hitting the switch and saying, were his clothes going to interfere? Oh, wait, he wasn't wearing any. Was he reaching for his waistband? He didn't have a waistband.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't wearing shit. It's was he going to shoot him with his dick? That's the only...
I know.
Is that a reasonable fear? Is that what it was? He was in fear of his life because he was going to be shot with a dick.
It's just very clear. It's like they see, you know, just like the DOJ report says, and just like, you know, when you read Darren Wilson's account of his encounter with Mike Brown, you know, if it's a black person, they're mm-hmm. basically Bruce Banner turning into the Hulk, no matter what. Naked, clearly deranged. The entire situation is just nuts.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
It just seems like they're just automatically conditioned to think black person equals crime or criminal. And they respond accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah,
because I don't know what he was so scared of. A naked man running towards him. What do you think? What's the worst that could happen? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, and this one's been very interesting too, because he was Air Force and very awkward.
Right.
He was an Air Force veteran, and I've been waiting because I know they're searching right now to find some reason. You know, mm-hmm. to besmirch this man's name. And I think it's going to be real difficult for them to do that in this particular case. You haven't seen anything yet, Ricky, have you?
This is a problem. Is that everyone's first, like, when you tell people about this story, their first thought is, well, he was on drugs. Actually, the problem is that he probably wasn't on drugs.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. He was bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
He was bipolar. Let that sink in. He was mentally ill. Most likely, being a veteran, dealing with some form of post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. Even when you don't see combat, the situations that you have to put yourself in to even be ready for combat are fucking stressful. It's not... This is so plainly wrong that... there's no way to justify it in reason. And in most of these cases, there isn't. It mm-hmm. takes either some sort of violation in physics, which we'll talk about later when we talk about the shooting, or it requires a superhuman black person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
That's it.
Just reading from New York Times article about just some more info about him... they quote from his Twitter account. He says, I'm thankful to be something other than normal. I don't fight my circumstance. I embrace it. I love myself. Always. Hashtag I am bipolar. On his Facebook page, he wrote, the media continues to paint the same horrific picture of mentally afflicted people. But I have to tell you, there are so many shades in between the extremes. He wrote that on March 4th. On March 6th, he wrote, the key thing to remember is hashtag Black Lives Matter, absolutely, but not more so than any other life. And then on Monday at 2 a.m., he put up all night, no days off, see you at the top. And his final post at 8:40 a.m. read, where I once saw death, I only see life. So, the rental office or the people that eventually called 9/11, and they made it very clear that he was, you know, naked and running around. He didn't have any weapon whatsoever. He wasn't threatening anyone at all.
Mm-mm. In fact, the news report that you sent me said that he was pretty calm.
Yeah.
He was just swinging from balconies.
He was clearly a danger to himself, but not one to anybody else. No. So I don't understand. The whole thing is just crazy. It's just nuts. And obviously, yeah. I know on Wednesday or Thursday, they had an aunt, because his name is Anthony, Aunt Atlanta, action in Atlanta, which I know was very well received and had a lot of coverage, and a lot of people that attended was very, very well received and well attended. It's just, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say at this point. It's just, you know, he was naked and unarmed at the time of the shooting, yet Officer Olson found him to be enough of a threat to take his life.
Mm-hmm.
Black equals threat.
Yeah, I mean, imagine this. Mind you, this is him suffering from a medical condition. Mm-hmm. Imagine you having a heart attack and the cops shooting you because they think you're a threat. Imagine you break your leg, and in that moment you're running around, you're limping around, panic, and the cop shoots you because he thinks you're a threat.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're talking about. This is a medical condition that he was clearly having an episode. The fact that he wasn't on drugs is, you know, that was the problem. He needed his drugs, his probably. Meds, yeah. I mean, even when you make those types of posts, and I've made those types of posts because I suffer from clinical depression, and so when you make those types of posts, it's about empowering not just yourself but other people and standing in solidarity. And a lot of times, you say those things, it's either affirmations that you feel like you're climbing out of that ditch, or you're still in that ditch, but you're focused on climbing out.
Right.
You don't. That's not a place that the types of posts that were made on his Facebook page aren't the type that signal any loss of hope. He actually had hope.
He really did. It's terrible. I mean, again, we talk about these all the time. And again, like I said, you know, 4 days, 3 hashtags. Let's just move, not too quickly, but we'll move on and start talking about Tony Robinson in Madison. Wisconsin, you know, I have been hearing for quite some time now that Madison is it's about to pop off. Let's just put it that way, that the tensions there have been running hot for a long time. Very similar situation that you saw and see in Ferguson. Same in Milwaukee as well. Mm-hmm. And Minneapolis is the other area that I know. I've just been hearing so much that these tensions between, you know, just an over-prosecuted, over-criminalized populace that is being policed by a white police force, and these factions are just reaching their boiling point. And obviously, this is generally what will precipitate it boiling over. And I think Madison is interesting because I think people think of it as, you know, this lefty, you know, progressive, you know, inclusive kind of place. If you were to ask the average white person what they think of it, but you ask black people that live there and they'll say that the racial disparities there are, you know, completely make that reputation null and void and have no actual place in reality. We are, of course, discussing the death of Tony Robinson, a black teenager who was shot and killed by white police officer Matt Kenny. And, you know, I just, the pictures, this entire thing is disturbing to me because they pulled this young man from his home. He was in his house. And up until today, we are recording on Saturday, the 14th of March. His mother has still yet to see his body. So just let that sink in for a moment. They've taken her child's life and she is not allowed to see him. to have closure for herself, to see what happened to him at all. And there's a lot of issues that are going to come up in this investigation, because so much of the story that the police are trying to sell just do not mm-hmm. match up with anything that is a physical evidence at the scene. Thoughts on this one, Ricky?
This one is, I actually talked about this on the Pennyman Doctrine, because I'm co-hosting until Molly comes back from maternity leave.
She ain't taking a maternity leave. I meant to tell you that. She's going to be back on the air like next week.
I think so, because even the last show, she pretty much did the last show she recorded yesterday.
Texted me from the hospital bed after she had the baby.
Wow.
Yeah. She's. I know that she's trying to stay away, but she. It's hard for her.
She can't do it.
She actually. Nah. But this is the thing. This cop broke into someone's house and shot the person after they broke into their house, on the assumption that he heard commotion. Now, can I ask a question? Does anyone break a door down? Does any cop break a door down without their gun being drawn? Anyone?
That would be a no.
No.
A hell no. They'd be an idiot mm-hmm. for doing so. But the second that you break someone's door down, you're coming in to kill. Or you're coming in, your intention is that if things don't look exactly perfect to me, I'm shooting.
Mm-hmm.
If that's your mentality going into a situation, why are we blaming the victim? Because in order to break a door down with a gun in your hand, you know, that whole action screams, I'll murder if I have to. I'll kill someone if I have to.
And this idea like, because it was a commotion. But you caused the commotion by breaking in the house.
Exactly.
You break down my door, you damn sure going to hear a commotion, because I'm going to be like, what the fuck is
what
going on
hell?
Here?
Mm-hmm.
What else are you going to do?
And does commotion justify breaking a door down, though? Like,
and, you know, not much has been released about this investigation. Did they establish why he was breaking into this house?
Well, there was a call for that someone had been running through traffic, and there was a second call that said that person who had been running through traffic had committed battery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. This is what I think is the most likely situation, based on all the evidence that we have thus far. He was running across the street. There was probably someone else running across this busy street. He's, you know, well known for doing it because his roommate's mother lives like right across, basically across the street and around the corner. So he may have actually been running through traffic. Whatever, it's fucking normal for him. It's just him getting to where he has to go. And then the cop who was called was heard noise from an apartment. There was no call saying that it was his apartment. Mm-hmm. He just heard noise from an apartment and he broke in, busted the door down. But hell, me having this conversation right now would sound like commotion to someone outside.
Right.
So I don't know that that's a relevant excuse to kill someone.
Mm-hmm. You heard some noise.
Yeah, you heard loud noises. Okay, knock on the fucking door.
Is that a crime? Right.
I get that you think a crime was going on. That's fine. But again, at the moment that you decide, especially when it's a battery suspect that you're chasing.
Mm-hmm.
When you make a decision to break down the door without knocking on the door first and announcing yourself as a police officer, because that's what you're supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
Noise isn't probable cause for anything.
Sounds like protocol was completely followed here. And notice my sarcasm.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this one's going to get ugly, I think. Not to say that the other isn't, but I think that the investigation will be a little more clear cut and focus on the individual police officer in the Atlanta case. But this one is, I think, is going to be really ugly because if I read correctly, I believe this officer had killed another unarmed black man 3 years ago or so. Just, you know, you shot him in the house. Why was he dragged outside the house? I have a problem with that in and of itself. Because again, once we're shot as black people, we don't even deserve medical attention either, apparently. I don't even know what to say. You know, I will say I've been really impressed, and Madison, I see you, with the outpouring of support, the consistency with their protesting, and more specifically with the reaction from the students and his classmates who took over the
Capitol.
They all walked out of school and went there, and was really moved to see that, and heartbreaking to just hear them all talking about him as a person and the loss that they all feel. You know, I could tell from some of the recordings just that this was the first time any of them had felt a loss like this. And so it was really visceral for them, you know, hard to comprehend, of course, because they're young people, contrary to what the police may want you to believe. They are young people. And so, you know, obviously prayers to his family and to his community. And you know, we'll obviously be following very closely with this case. But I think it's going to get dicey, especially as Tia mentioned, because very little has been released from the police department as to what's going on.
Right. At any time, did he call for backup? Do you know?
Again,
no, that's not known.
That's not known. And that, of course,
that's the other thing, too, is that. And me and John were talking about this, how I think everyone has this notion of police that comes from, like, TV and TV cops and shit. But the reality is TV cops get held more accountable than actual cops do. You know, someone goes in without backup and they end up fucking killing someone on TV. They're talking to IA. They're doing, like, they're standing trial. You know, shit that doesn't happen.
Well, yeah, and a few more words about, I was mentioning that disparity in Madison, the two Madisons, which we heard about in Ferguson as well. A 2013 study of Dane County, where Madison is located, confirmed what black residents experience in their daily lives. 75% of black children in the county live in poverty, compared to 5% of white children. Black adults are 11 times more likely to be arrested than white adults, and black youth are 15 times more likely to be arrested than their white counterparts. Dane County has a black population of 6 to 7%. The Dane County Jail has a black population of 48%. So when I say that it is a powder keg, that those are the ingredients that go into making an explosive situation, and you add a unarmed teenager death to the mix at the hands of law enforcement, and you have a recipe for significant strife and battle ahead from that community. So I will expect to see lots of organizing on the ground there and lots of attention put on the area there. And we had, you know, we had Dontre Hamilton in Milwaukee also this past year. So it's definitely a lot going on. The third of the names, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Nicelius Vinzant, who was killed. I'm just so sick of it. This one was in Aurora, in Colorado. Another powder keg state with two different realities going on. And I will say that in this particular instance, I know that the police have been very proactive in terms of interacting with protest organizers and hoping to discuss with them what happened, And of course, the immediate besmirching of the victim has begun mm-hmm. already. Not a surprise. At the same time, the officer who killed him is, you know, he's won an award.
Hero.
You know, all of these things and dot, 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 dot. So, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. You know, when the only picture they put up of somebody who was unarmed and killed is their mugshot. I don't know what to really say about that. It says everything, actually.
Yeah. Think about what the city that we're talking about. This is the same police, or this is the same city where someone walked into a movie theater a few years back and killed 40 some odd people. This motherfucker's standing trial, as he should.
Mm-hmm. But he's alive to stand trial.
Exactly. You know, I don't doubt that the cop was an award-winning cop. That doesn't say anything about the incident. That doesn't say anything about what happened in this instance. Should it be taken into account if something's wrong and he deserves to be held accountable? I can entertain an argument about that.
Especially for the
but
thing.
But that has nothing to do with the situation.
He was wanted for removing his ankle bracelet while on parole. I mean, I don't really even know.
What?
That's what his warrant was for, you know. And now they're he was suspected of these other things, but he wasn't arrested for those other things. So I don't know why they're even in the conversation. What he was wanted for was removing his ankle bracelet while on parole. I don't know how much more of a passive warrant that could be.
Yeah.
And again, unarmed. It doesn't really matter what he was wanted for. He was not armed. Why are we shooting?
And couldn't be legally. So
you're right.
You know, it's not like you had reason to suspect it. He took a fucking ankle bracelet off, probably because he wanted to enjoy his life. He's on parole. That occurred to anyone?
Yeah, apparently not. So again, just to recap, we have Mass in Wisconsin, Aurora, Colorado, and Chamblee, Georgia, three cities in which three unarmed black men were killed over a period of 4 days. Friday, we had Nisalis Vincent. The reason for his death is still unknown, so we don't even know where he was shot or how or anything. But the 37-year-old was approached by officers for violating parole by removing his ankle monitor. And there was no explanation as to why the weapon was discharged at all. But they have said that Vincent was unarmed at the time. Officer is currently on administrative leave. Later that same night, 19-year-old Tony Robinson died of gunshot wounds after Madison police officer Matt Kinney allegedly fired his gun in self-defense. I'll put quotes around that. The local police chief said that Kinney was responding to reports of a black man yelling and jumping in front of cars. I'm not even going to even finish this sentence there. And then on Monday, 27-year-old Anthony Hill, who had a history of mental illness, they can't even say he was a veteran. That's mm-hmm. not what he is. He has not a history of mental illness. Anyways, he was shot and killed by Officer Robert Olson in his apartment complex outside of Atlanta. A maintenance worker called to say he was on the ground and naked. And we have several accounts that vary. Separate eyewitnesses on the scene. One said that he had his hands raised. A second said he had his hands at his side. A third said that he was running towards the officer. I will say in all cases, again, he was naked.
It doesn't matter where his hands are.
So it
he's
doesn't
fucking
really
naked.
Matter where his hands were.
Unless
he's naked.
Unless he's going... It's... Again, it either has to violate the laws of physics or that person has to be superhuman.
Yeah. Yeah. We That's are. It. Aren't we superhuman, though? We're not?
Yes.
No. We've been made superhuman, but we're not born superhuman. We're not born this way. We're born fucking people. Like I just want to be treated like a person. I don't get why that's so difficult for people to understand. No one ever sits up there and says, when you say Black Lives Matter, no one says, no shit, all lives matter. They say, no, how about all lives matter?
Yeah.
Well, bitch, can we get to mine first?
Yeah, how about that?
not to interrupt, but I've been listening.
Can we concede, before we move on to B, can we concede A?
Can we concede A? Can
you know, I was listening in, and this is Drew.
Who the hell is this?
Very white guy. Drew, I was just thinking, you know what? I absolutely demand that this dialogue include a white male perspective. Because I haven't heard All Lives Matter in like 45 minutes. Not all white people. Not all white people, goddammit. Not all white people.
Well, listeners, as you can hear, we are joined by the very white guy himself. What's up?
Just thought I'd be a monkey wrench, sitting around.
He's going to join us for the rest of the show.
I was listening, but yeah. I held my tongue until Ricky was like, we haven't had any not all white people. Where's all lives matter? So I thought I would come in and fill that very white, not me, but typically white male role.
What were, you're just in time because we're about to roll right into segment two of Bitch, You Tried It. Saturday here on the Ferguson Response Network podcast and talk about the gentleman. Note the sarcasm in my voice there of SAE.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
And I should say, hey, Ricky, hey, Tia. What up?
What's up? Oh, man. This one is bad.
I gotta woosah for a minute before we get started on this one.
The question is where to start. There's like 20 different things you could talk about.
I know. I mean, there's so many angles to go at this. I don't even think we need to go through I'm not going to play the clip or any of that shit because I'm sick of hearing it over and over again, quite frankly. But obviously, if you haven't heard already, the SAE chapter at Oklahoma University had a video where they were singing a racist lyrics to a song that clearly has been taught in their fraternity for quite some time. The president of the university took pretty strident and quick action in suspending and disbanding the fraternity on the campus, had them move out of their frat house, removed their letters, expelled the two students that were clearly visible on the video. I'm going to read from the letter that they received. This is to notify you that as president of the University of Oklahoma, acting in my official capacity, I've determined that you should be expelled from this university effective immediately. You will be expelled because of your leadership role in leading a racist and exclusionary chant, which has created a hostile educational environment for others. If you disagree with this decision, you have the right to contact the university equal opportunity officer to be heard by close of business Friday, March 13, 2015. The office is located blah, blah, blah. If you request that the EEO officer provide an opportunity to you to contest the decision, he will hold a meeting within 10 days on or by March 23rd. You may be represented by legal counsel at that meeting should you desire. Peace. So he didn't say peace, but he was basically
deuces.
Like, deuces. And it's funny because Drew and I were having this conversation right after this all happened, and he was like, well, you know, it was really I don't remember what word you used, but you said something like it was a good response. And I said
appropriate.
Yeah. I said appropriate. And I said it was an appropriate response because I don't know what else you could do. But yeah. I don't hear the things I would like to hear, which is, you know, I didn't hear the word white supremacy mentioned. I didn't hear the root cause of why this chant would have been written, passed down, and sung on this bus. I don't hear the atmosphere in which that would be fostered at a university. I don't hear, you know, to me, those are the things that I would have liked to hear. I think it's great. I don't think it's great. I don't think there was any other choice but to disband the frat and kick these two guys out and pull the letters down. And I mean, there's nothing else to do. This video was so egregious that there were no other choices really for the school. And so I'll say, great, you did your job well. Wonderful. That's all good and well. But it's your job. So let's not give too many pats on the back for that. I want to see the conversation elevated beyond that point, though, because just kicking these kids out of the school and also have a problem with just two of them being kicked out. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of people on that bus, a lot of voices on that bus, a lot of people singing on that bus. Why aren't all of them gone? Mm-hmm. So Tia, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you deal with the youth.
Well,
you deal with the youth today.
I concur with what you were saying about, I appreciate the swift response, but that doesn't necessarily get to the root of the problem. Obviously, this is, you know, a widespread belief maybe amongst the constituents at the university, which should be an impetus to open up some type of dialogue. Like you said, what's the history behind this? This chant sounds like it came from like the 19th century, talking about hanging people from a tree. So obviously this has been a belief that has been etched into this fraternity's beginnings, its origins.
Yep.
So I think that they should be continuing this further besides just dismissing the fraternity and expelling the students. And I agree with you also that there is a way to find out who all is on that bus. Just because you can see those two students in the video, they can do an investigation. That bus looked like it was chartered. There was clearly a bus driver who would be able to identify
and
the
they,
students that were on the bus.
I know how that shit works. Yeah. They all bought tickets to wherever they were going.
Okay.
So we know exactly who went. This is not... No, all this shit has records. So let's not, nobody uses cash for anything anymore. Come on.
Nah.
They all use Apple Pay. So we can find out exactly who went to that place and who was on that bus. Just for liability reasons, they would know all of that information. So, it's definitely not any, secret there. You know, SAE's, headquarters is at NU, T.
Yes.
Which was interesting.
I said, notice how all of the other organizations or all the other chapters are distancing themselves from this.
They sure are.
But
except for they've had these problems before.
I can't believe that this is the only chapter that knows that chant, has recited that chant.
They had recent. They had recent issues.
St. Louis campus.
At Washington University, they had an issue there, and they had another one as well. Late last year, I think December, the Washington University one was 2013, and then they had a more recent one, 2014. And since this has happened, many people have come forward just saying that this is something that is known about SAE as a fraternity.
Yeah. I had someone on my timeline said that this song was a known entity in their frat in the early 90s when I was in college. Mm-hmm. So for all the Waka Flocka Flame and rap music caused these white kids to emulate what they're hearing.
Oh, don't get ahead of yourself. We're going to talk about that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get to that in a minute. Don't go too far. Go ahead, Ricky.
Here's the thing. You want to know the history of SAE? It was founded in 1851.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, again, pre-Civil War. To go to college and be a part of a fraternity, you had to be fairly well off, or the child of someone fairly well off, right? So who in the South was fairly well off and could join a fraternity?
Ooh, black people?
Let me guess.
Damn sure it wasn't. It was fucking slave owners and the sons of slave owners. So, yeah, this shit has its roots in literally in slavery. So when you sit there and say that this was anyone's fault but these children, but these kids, these ignorant ass fucking kids, you're not holding them accountable. You're doing them a disservice,
mm-hmm.
not anyone else, because they're gonna the action itself is deplorable, but it's only deplorable because it's blatant racism.
Well, and to that point, Ricky, and sort of, you know, Leslie, you and I talked a little bit on our podcast, is the reaction from society, is it missing an opportunity by focusing too much on the overt act of individuals? So it's like, you know, let's just cut these people out of the campus, out of the fraternity. Let's distance ourselves from the incident and put it behind us. Does that really, you know, what does that do? Like you said, it doesn't bring up white supremacy. It doesn't, like, there was an article, and we can post it on the notes, but the individual said there was a moment, a teachable moment that was missed, and literally said, what would it have been if the president of the university took those students, sat them down in his office, and played the recording of them chanting that racist thing in front of their black house, because they have individuals that work at their house for these boys, that are black. They have a person that works in the kitchen. They have some else. So there's multiple people that work at the SAE home. And right away, the one black individual that's, I think, in the kitchen said, like, oh, I really like these guys. They're really nice. They're not that bad. You know, it's a shame it's happening. What would have the situation been had they all sat down and watched that tape and that individual had really been able to look those boys in the eye and said, is this what you think of me? I work in your home, and I've been cooking meals for this house for 15 years, and this is really what you think? What would that have done?
I think they should make them watch it in front of Kimbo Slice.
Yeah.
Weren't you talking about Black Rage before? Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I mean, because let's be real. They should have – I'll put it this way. I take issue with them being expelled. Because they should have to walk on that fucking campus and deal with the type of embarrassment and pressure that they put black people through with these type of actions.
Yeah,
for real.
Deal with it for a fucking semester.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and even if you
and
expel
they should be publicly
someone.
Shamed. Yeah, this isn't public shaming. This is this is distancing yourself. This isn't a part of our what we do. Yeah, it is. It's very much part of what you do because you allow that fraternity on your campus. This is no, again, we're talking about a fraternity that was formed in the pre-Civil War South. What the fuck do you think they think about black people?
Yeah.
And sporting the Confederate flags in their windows.
In their windows after the incident has occurred, for sure. I thought it was interesting, a few responses, let's just say. So Texas State University member of SAE went to Twitter to, enlighten us all. He says, if it was black people singing about crackers, we would never hear a word about it. He continues, let's start gangs and shoot each other and attack cops. Then maybe the media will like us. Hashtag CNN hates me. And he continues, I've been chanting cracker for 20 minutes. No CNN story yet. We'll keep you updated.
The fuck? This twisted ass.
They want to be the victim so bad.
So bad.
It's so adorable.
So bad.
How convenient.
I know. These worn white people, though, that's you do not want to look under that rock.
Oh, that's a bad rock right there. It's
fucking gross.
So, yeah, and like Drew said, plenty of people have been saying, former pledge Dylan Merriman heard the chant in 2010 at Louisiana Tech. Parker Rice, who was one of the expel students, he said that the song was taught to us, so they didn't make it up. Obviously, they wouldn't have made it up at all.
It's too catchy for them to make up.
Way too catchy. Way
like,
too
I'm not gonna bullshit you. I heard the thing twice and it was stuck in my head for about a day and a half.
What's the melody?
The song is catchy as fuck. You don't just put that together in one day.
No, but it's a limerick. It's if you're happy and you know, clap your hands. Of course it gets stuck.
Yeah.
If you're going to that segment now, the whole rap thing, that's ridiculous. Because that song's older than dirt.
Well,
1852. That's when that song was invented.
The incident at Washington University in St. Louis was that they had, as part of their pledge initiation, that the pledges had to go up to a group of black people and call them the N-word to incite a reaction.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was a.
So not only do they pass on wealth, they pass on ignorance and systemic racism.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know, like, I don't think I could pass that initiation. I'd be like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. Like, this is what you want me to do? Like,
yeah, no. I want to play a quick video from John Zalance.
Morning, Joe.
No, a four-star offensive lineman who had committed to play football at the Big 12 school in November. He visited there, so let's hear him.
Coach Stoops and all the other staff that was real welcoming, they treated me like family as soon as I got on campus. They've been recruiting me really hard, so yeah, I loved it, and I just feel like that was home back in November, and it really was from the get-go. You know, it was very disturbing. I never thought that stuff was still trending as much as it was back then, or it could keep repeating itself, and it was very disturbing. I didn't like what's going on. I'm glad the way they handled it, but that's still just a bad downside to me. I really didn't like things being around the bush with me. I wanted to be direct, and you know, I just was notified by the coaches this morning. They got reached out to me, sent me a couple messages. They can't call me; I only can call them. So it was very bad. I was hoping they'll let me know ahead of time what's going on. If they would have did that, I would have been very calm with it. But I mean, I wasn't notified. I just had to find out on my own by a lot of TV.
So yeah. So again, that is Oklahoma Sooners football recruit John DeLanza, four-star offensive lineman who had been, as he said, heavily recruited to play football and had signed with them. And has signed with them, and had visited the campus in Oklahoma with his mother, and they have withdrawn. He will not be attending their school next year. So I thought that was an interesting outcome.
Hopefully, the right leverage, right, on these. I think we've talked about people are usually sorry they offended you, right? Or they're not sorry at all, right?
Like, yeah, that's
or if they're, if they are sorry, it's like, oh, I'm sorry I offended you. Or even like, I'm sorry you're offended. But never, I'm sorry I didn't take the steps necessary to prevent some shit like this from happening. And I think now that there's a penalty, a four-star recruit dropping out, I'd love to see more stuff like that. I think that's the best punitive action to come out of this. And it wasn't their decision. The recruit was like, fuck it, I'm out.
I think it's the best punitive action because it will force the university to be proactive to prevent these things from happening. I feel like all of the other responses have always been about them getting caught. And this is something different. This is somebody saying like, yeah, you got caught. You did what you should have done by getting caught. But the fact that this environment was there, I don't want any parts of that. Mm-hmm. And that forces them to confront a completely different set of issues, which I don't think have been confronted yet in any of these situations when it comes to college campuses. So that's why I like that response from a recruit saying, yeah, I see what you did there, but y'all came to my house and talked to my mama talking about I was going to be your family. And this is the kind of shit you have going on at your school. So yeah, no, that's not my family. Peace. So shout out to him. Good move, dude.
What was his name again? Lift him up.
Lance.
John. I just pulled it down, Drew. Why you always got to be asking me questions after I done pulled
stuff down?
I think
it was Lance. His
last name's Lance. That's awesome.
We'll have the link in the show
notes. He's an offensive lineman, four-star recruit.
Four-star recruit.
That's going to hurt. That's a loss.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you better believe he's going to fuck up that school every time he plays.
Yeah, in the Big 12, too?
He sure is.
I hope he goes to like a Big 12 school. And just tears ass over him every time he meets.
So before we move on to the media fallout and that side of things, I did want to just mention that the SAE chapter that was disbanded has hired a high-profile lawyer, Stephen Jones. And he is representing them because they're unhappy that their chapter was closed by University of Oklahoma President David Boren. I wish I'm gonna try and find David Boren's video. He put a few hot takes out there. That dude was pissed.
Oh yeah,
I have not seen an old white dude that pissed about something racist in a long time.
Seriously,
he was mad.
Yeah. He addressed it on Twitter within like an hour and a half.
You could like see his face was all red.
Veins popping out.
Veins popping everywhere. He was pissed.
It's because they showed such bad media training.
And he used to be a senator too. That's why I know he was extra pissed. He's a former Democratic senator in Oklahoma. So
we don't sing these songs outside of chambers. Yes. Come on. Yes. Come on. How
we
dare you?
Do this behind closed doors only.
First rule of Congress.
First rule of
white supremacy.
SAE.
Never talk about white supremacy.
We don't do this in public.
God damn it. When cell phones are out, you don't say the N-word.
These children these days with their internets and technologies, don't they know better?
You know what this is, to be quite honest, now that I'm really thinking about it? It's a very similar thing to respectability politics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because the reality is that a large majority of those people who are condemning what's being done are just as fucking racist.
Oh, behind the doors. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
We white people love to wag our finger hypocritically.
You showed bad media training. Yeah. That's what they're punishing them for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll take that back. I don't know why. I don't know specifically why the dean is. But he is the actions were swift, but I still, there are people who would want them punished simply because you told our secret. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about white supremacy.
No, it's even simpler than that, Ricky. It's we're not those kind of white people. We're better than that. I can point to you and be like, look, I'm still upholding the systems of supremacy, but at least I don't chant epithets on video. I'm better than you. You know, and that's why it's so distancing from the individuals and why I don't think that's a real solution. It kind of sweeps under the rug and let's get past this as quickly as we can without having an actual dialogue.
Kinder, gentler white supremacy.
Right. Yeah.
Benevolent supremacy.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty interesting.
National leaders for the fraternity chapter caught on video singing racial slurs say that the chant is not part of the fabric of the organization.
But
there are questions. Damn,
you're on CNN
song,
again.
Or at least the sentiment in it has been heard in chapters beyond the one at the University of Oklahoma. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has been looking into it.
Sigma Alpha Epsilon today said racist behavior entered its University of Oklahoma chapter 3 to 4 years ago, calling it a horrible cancer.
Oh, yeah. Cut that cancer before it infects too many other groups.
Brandon Weghurst is SAE's national spokesman. He says the fraternity has so far been unable to verify reports of similar chants at other campuses.
Oh, right.
Parker Rice, one of the SAE members in this video, said the song was taught to us.
When somebody says it was taught to us, we know it was not the national headquarters. It wasn't even something that would be part of our history at all.
Yeah, Rice said, I am deeply sorry for what I did Saturday night. It was wrong and reckless. I admit it likely was fueled by alcohol consumed at the house before the bus trip. But that's not an excuse. The parents of a second fraternity member in the video, Levi Pettit, also apologized. He made a horrible...
I'm going to just pause right here, Jeff, because of Parker and Levi. Really?
God damn it.
Really?
Name two what's the thing like the survey says, right? Name two names of individuals likely to rush a SAE fraternity in the Southern
Parker
Oklahoma State
and
chant the
Levi.
N-word on video. Parker and Levi.
If they were girls, they would be named Muffy and Buffy. Honest to goodness. Becky.
Horrible mistake, and will live with the consequences forever.
It's an old fraternity tradition of singing these types of songs.
Andrew Lowe's, who in college was in SAE, is now an outspoken critic of Greek life.
Uh-oh.
Racism is alive and well on the American college campus, and especially in fraternities.
E.J. Veasley is an active member of the University of Cincinnati's Black Student Association and a proud SAE member.
We do not act like that, and that bad behavior is not something that we represent.
In 2013, the SAE chapter at Washington University in St. Louis was suspended following allegations that pledges sang racial slurs to African-American students. Last year, Clemson University's chapter was suspended for holding a racially themed party.
That racially themed party was called Crip-mas Party, FYI.
That's three different campuses.
The growing scandal has sparked a rallying cry, and today the normally silent statues spoke volumes.
So, yeah, I just wanted to play that because I was talking about the couple of incidents that I had mentioned earlier about that. So, they have hired a lawyer.
Let's get it correct. A lawyer who's famous for defending Timothy McVeigh, the Oklahoma City bomber. That's, like, high-profile lawyer guy. Like, it's not just some small lawyer. It's like they went to the guy in Oklahoma.
Now, they did kill McVeigh, so there's that.
I'm not saying he was good at it.
But there was no defending that guy.
No, sure.
And what is he even on retainer for? There's no charges or anything.
They want to get reinstated.
Please.
They think that it was a few bad apples have ruined them, and that
and
those
freedom
those
of speech
don't speak to them.
Ricky, well, and did you hear the lawyer though? He did. I'm not making arguments. I'm saying what he had said, that there was 5 buses, and this was 10 students on one of the 5 buses, so it's not the whole SAE group, whether or not they were singing at the same time, I have no idea. But then he said some sort of like, all 19-year-old boys are due some foolishness, which is like, really? All 19-year-old boys are all white, rich SAE boys? Because I didn't think Tamir Rice got much of a chance to be foolish. Not no 5 minutes.
Well, let's look at that for a second, though. Like, yes, all 18, 19-year-old boys do fucking foolish shit. I did dumb shit at 18, 19. Drew, I'm sure you did too.
Oh, yeah.
But none of that shit's fucking racist. That's what we're talking about. It doesn't matter whether Yes, it was dumb. No one's disputing that. When I had a DUI running from a cop and I T-boned another cop car, it's fucking stupid.
Whoa. There was brakes, no Ricky. We're going to have to put a pin in that story. So make a mental note. I got to talk to Ricky about this story one day.
Yeah, I mean, no, I was 18, too. That's what made it even worse. But, like, when that happened, you know, no one sat there and said, oh, well, you know, boys do stupid shit. I got held accountable.
Exactly.
Right. Even the word boys. They're 19 and they're boys.
There were consequences. You don't get to decide what the consequences are, but there are consequences for your actions regardless of how dumb you are, how old you are. There's always going to be a consequence.
It's also not lost on me that as the lawyer is saying that, you know, all 19-year-olds deserve 5 minutes of foolishness. He said they were entitled, because I wanted to make sure I put that word.
Entitled.
That they were entitled to 5 minutes of foolishness. It's not lost on me that Tony Robinson was 19 years old.
Mike Brown was 18, and he was a man. He wasn't a boy.
Tamir Rice was 12 in the body of a man.
What was the other phrase this lawyer? He said that he doesn't
want
them to
be... He said that he didn't think it was fair for them all to be tar brushed with this tar...
Painted.
Same brush of racism.
Are you... he can't be that tone deaf. He's got to be deliberately, like, doing something to bring attention away from them and onto him.
No, Drew, he's just a racist.
That's a dog whistle loud as fuck.
He's just a racist, and he's just dog whistling out here on the streets. Because he can.
Don't tar paint me. What the good Lord? Yeah. Stop it.
Because now they're going to be the victims.
They are. That's why they hired this guy.
You want to be the victim so bad. It's like really all that power and you really want to be the victim? Come actually be the victim and see if you still want to do this.
You ever seen that meme, Ricky, where there's a white girl crying over her white boyfriend's shoulder and the text says, like, Becky was mean to me at lunch. Now I know what slavery was like.
Yes.
White tears.
Have you seen the what is it? The Willy Wonka meme? Where it's like, you're afraid of whites being a minority? Yeah. What's wrong with being a minority?
Charlie and the Chocolate. Charlie good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. How's that going? So we will transition now as we have, I think we've covered the SAE side of things. We'll transition to where all, high-level discussions of racism and education collide. Waka Flocka Flame, because that's the next place I go.
I thought you were going to say Love and Hip Hop. I thought Love and Hip Hop Atlanta. I really swear to God.
I know, as sure as I know anything, I know as soon as there's going to be a discussion about high-level mediation of racism and education and fraternities and history, my first place I go to is Waka Flocka, because I know he will lead the way and let us know what to do. So Waka,
Mr. Flame,
actually was scheduled to perform at OU for SAE, and he went on CNN and said he was disgusted and offended by what he heard, and he decided he didn't, want to play there. He backed out, which is actually a misnomer because, with the fraternity disbanded, he couldn't play anywhere anyways, but that's fine. Waka was upset, just like the rest of us. Our friends at Morning Joe decided to have a discussion about this because somehow this is the important thing to discuss, not white supremacy or fraternity hazing or racist actions on an education campus, but Waka Flocka Flame. So let's hear what they had to say.
Well, no, I just I think it's worth noting in the Oklahoma University story, they have two students that have been expelled. They have this dorm mother who's been seen on video using racist language that was in a song that she was singing. And clearly, the most horrifying sight on this video is these boys and some women chanting these racist slogans. Having said that, there's this rapper,
I'm going to stop right there because once a white bitch says, having said that, some racist shit is about. Here comes the bull immediately following having said that. It's like, having said something sane, here comes the crazy.
I'm going to completely discount everything.
Well, no,
she didn't
say something sane. Because we're thinking that she means the words the way that we mean the words.
That's
when she
true.
Says that this was a horrible act, she's not really saying that it was horrible because it hurt black people.
Right.
It's horrible because it unmasks white supremacy.
White supremacy, exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, let's.
So that's horrible to her.
Yeah.
Oh shit, we have to talk about race again. Crap. Damn it.
Get
Waka, damn
it,
you little white kids.
Get Waka Flocka in here. Where's Waka Flocka? All right,
get some Negro that we think is stupid and we'll bring them on.
I do also want to mention they have a, this
distract.
Is an entire table full of white people discussing this because they couldn't get a black person
apparently
cared to talk about a rapper and racist chants in Oklahoma.
And let's make a mental note. This was on MSNBC, not Fox.
Yeah,
right.
So everyone loves no better than nobody else.
Loves their Rachel Maddow.
Quote unquote liberal media.
Yeah. Mm.
There's no more liberal media. All right, here we go. Mika. Mika's got the mic, people. Let's let her keep going.
Who has performed for these kids in the past on the campus? And he canceled his show at the University of Oklahoma after this video surfaced, saying that in the wake of the video, he's disgusted and disappointed. And
you saw him on another network last night.
I saw him on another network.
I'm shocked and stunned and deeply saddened that they used that
word.
And
then they said, Waka Flocka Flame, thank you very much. Good luck to you. And he was gone. And I'm like, look at his lyrics. There?
That, of course, is asshole. Who you think?
Joe
Scarborough himself.
And what the fuck is it exactly? What's so amusing to him that Waka Flocka would have?
It's amusing to him that Waka Flocka Flame
would be offended.
That as a black man, he would be offended by the song that was sung on that bus. Hmm. That's funny to him.
That's a chuckle.
Because we are inhuman, and Waka Flocka Flame himself is inhuman, so he couldn't possibly be offended by anything. All right, here we go.
And I'm thinking, why wouldn't you ask this guy why you would go on that campus? And if you look at every single song, I guess you call it, he's written, it's a bunch of garbage, full of N-words, full of F-bombs. It's wrong. And he shouldn't be disgusted with them. He should be disgusted with himself.
The fuck?
Whew. Whew.
Can I point out that
sorry,
they pay
did
him to
the
do
Waka
that?
Fly, right. The Waka Flocka yeah. say hang people from trees. I don't know.
Yeah, that was his number one hit.
Was that a lyric?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Yeah. There'll never be an SAE by Waka Flocka Fame. You didn't know that?
Right.
Top of the charts.
Okay. People by race from anything? No. Okay. Just saying. I mean, I think it's totally fair that we compare those two completely.
Totally.
He should be disgusted with himself because it has nothing to do with the incident, and he had nothing to do with the incident. And being, as Joe says, it's full of N-words, full of F-words.
Yeah.
What?
I have to give some credit where credit is due.
This is some.
You knew they were going to go tangential and deflect.
This is some sleight of hand bullshit, man.
I don't think I could have guessed. Like I think like there's like a racism response generator and they just turn a wheel and it's like Waka Flocka Flame came out. It's like, let's pivot to Waka Flocka Flame somehow. It's not about these white kids. It's not about them at all. It's about Waka Flocka Flame. Of course.
Well, it's about them not wanting to be accountable.
Of course.
Yeah. So
and did
that's the bottom line.
Tell me y'all saw the hashtag.
We'll talk about that next. I'm not even finished with this because Willie Geist comes in. He's the voice of reason. I'll put quotes around that because he really is. There's no fucking reason at all. His point is that he's the in-house panel's expert on gangster rap apparently, and he he manages to say that language is contextual and that a black person using the N-word differs in both degree and kind from white frat boys at a Southern university using it in a song about systemic discrimination that references lynching. Okay, sounds pretty reasonable to me. Willie, thanks for throwing that in there. I'm going to quote him. There's a distinction between a bunch of white kids chanting about hanging someone from a tree using that term and Waka Flocka Flame using it. Waka Flocka Flame has never been said on MSNBC this much ever in the history of ever.
Yes.
So that in and of itself is just making me laugh, just cracking me up. Scarborough says, well, of course there is, and then misses the entire point and continues on his rant about, the N-word being used in rap. That's the reason for all of this. These kids, they hear it in the music. 90% of the people that watch these shows, he mentions the show Empire, which never uses the word, the N-word. So I don't know how that got into the conversation. He's like, wait, what are black people? Black people, Empire. N-word. Waka Flocka Flame. He's just throwing watermelon.
That's why I said it's the racism fuck? Response it, generator.
It's just insanity. Yeah. It's so crazy.
Who's the guy, William S. Burroughs? Didn't he write books by like chopping them into pieces and stripping them back together weirdly?
Oh my
That's what they're doing
God.
Here.
It's like, I just don't even. My favorite thing, though, is Mika got called because, okay, so then we'll go to the, well, anyways, first, anybody have anything to say about this bullshit? Let's just start there first.
You know what? This is why I hate mainstream media.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is they had a solid game plan that they went in to do. Attack, attack, attack. Someone played the voice of reason. Someone played the fucking adult in the room. And then attack, attack, attack. Without mentioning that, you know, you're going to blame this on... You're going to blame those white kids who say the word nigga in the same way that Waka Flocka Flame says it. The small segment that there is of that he might, the three kids across the nation that he's directly responsible for doing that. Okay, fine. He's responsible for like three people. Who invented the word, motherfucker? Really?
Mm.
Come on. Mm-hmm. Come on. Don't. Really? We have to go back that far? Really?
Yeah. We don't have to go back that far. And I will go so far as to... Let me see if I can pull this up real quick.
Yeah, and one other thing before you... While you're looking for that is that... He'll sit there and say that, yeah, 70% of the population... Or the percentage of people that watch... What is that? Empire,
yeah.
Or white.
Yeah.
So, okay, 70% of white people are okay with black people saying nigga. Why are you worried about
but
it?
But they don't say...
Even if they don't say nigga on
Empire. So that doesn't even make sense. That's my whole point is that they don't say... Yeah. You think at 8 o'clock, at 9 o'clock at night on Fox, they're going to be... They're going to let Terrence Howard just drop N-words. No! They do not let that happen.
No.
The fuck out of here. So it didn't even make any sense. I don't even know how Empire got brought into it. They were like, oh, people are talking about it and there's black people involved. Empire.
Yeah.
Let's say that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is from our very own, very white guy. He has a PSA for you.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
White people, you cannot use the N-word. No N's in G-A, N's in E-R. Not one of my friends. And, oh, they can use it, but we can't. Stop. You're done. You can't use it. No.
And if you don't know, now you know.
We interrupt our program.
Oh, my God. I love that.
You can find that on Instagram.
I need that on my soundboard. I really do. I'm stealing that.
You can find that on Instagram.
You know what I wish? I wish there wasn't, like, on a daily, almost hourly basis, a need to send that out.
I send it to people every goddamn day.
All the time.
Why can't we say it? Just because. You got a whole goddamn language. Why do you need to say it? You need to ask yourself that question.
Well, you can say it. How come you can say it? You can say it, but we can't. Well,
how come you can get home loans?
It's freedom of speech, man.
How about that?
You're pressing me.
I bet you're worried about a
word. Fuck, you worried about a word.
Like, that's what privilege is. Think about it's always my feelings matter more than, you know, the fact that I'm kicking you in the teeth.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about this the other day.
Because you hurt my toenail.
I was talking to somebody about this the other day about gentrification, and they were saying, it was a white person, and was just having a very, actually really great discussion about it. You know, is there a way to have responsible gentrification, which is a question I ask all the time. And I said, well, there's ways to discuss gentrification in specific terms, you know, making sure that housing is still affordable for the residents that are there, ensuring that new businesses hire local individuals to work in the store, in the businesses, stuff like that. I said, but the problem really comes from, as most situations like this come from, is white progressives. They're the biggest problem, actually, truth be told. Because a racist is going to be a racist. It's going to be a racist. But white progressives, man, y'all need to get your shit together, entirely together, because they have this syndrome where they're more concerned with feeling good than doing good.
This
is the situation that it leads to, is bullshit like talking about Waka Flocka Flame when you should be talking about white supremacy.
Well, and part of that feeling good, Leslie, is that as a white person, I feel like within the white community, the envisionment of racism has been narrowly defined as like a hooded KKK Klansman, you know, like these boys hurling epithets, you know, on the bus. That's racism.
It's been narrowly defined by them.
Oh, of course. But then to instill that level of comfort, because that's very easy to kind of like, oh, I'm not like that. I'm not like that. And, you know, we think of this just world fallacy and we're good people and we don't say the N-word. We don't use epithets. And I donated to the Boys and Girls Club. I'm a good white person, despite the fact that every politician I've ever voted for has made all these, you know, voting rights bills and, you know, all the other things that I, as a white person, would contribute to the problem of white supremacy. But as long as I don't say the N-word, I'm good.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't see color.
That's right. As we are apt to do, black people, because what else do we have but humor? Truthfully, if we couldn't laugh, we wouldn't be living, truth be told. After Mika and Joe and their buddies went on their Waka Flocka Flame tirade, the hashtag rap albums that cause slavery popped up on black Twitter. And God bless black Twitter. Let me just give a...
Oh, no.
Just black Twitter is the best. So I'm going to read a few choice... Damn, you weren't there?
This.
Oh, Ricky,
this hashtag was everything.
You missed a good one.
On Twitter now.
Straight out of Cotton Fields. Get Free or Die Trying.
Oh.
Slave.
By Fitty.
That's right, by Fitty. Okay. Slave Registration.
Oh.
Too Legit to Quit Slavery. It Takes Two to Make a Slave Act Right.
God damn. No. No.
Long Live the Sugar Cane.
Oh.
Big Willie Lynch Style.
God damn. No. No.
Mama said sell you off.
I fucking love you guys.
Mama said sell you off.
God, that's...
Genocide and Juice.
Genocide and Juice.
Damn.
Yo.
It Takes a Nation of Captors to Hold Us Back.
Leslie, oh, if you're reading this, you're getting whipped.
Yes.
Come on.
Massa said Knock You Out.
No.
The Beastie Boys, Paul's Plantation. Yep.
White people got 99 problems, but being black ain't one.
True that.
Damn.
Yep. Racist delight.
Black Twitter. I fucking love
it. I love it.
I love it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is priceless.
Get Rich or Die Cropping.
Oh.
Three-fifths Mafia.
Three-fifths? No.
I like the ones that weren't even...
I wasn't ready.
Wasn't there a bunch that were... they weren't even malaprops, like Fear of a Black Planet.
Oh, yeah, Fear of a Black Planet. Some they just put up there like a Fear of a Black Planet. That definitely did it. Oh, yeah, there was a bunch of them that just... Who bought ya?
What was the one about... Deliberate miseducation of Lauryn Hill or something like
that? Yeah, the deliberate miseducation of Lauryn Hill and the miseducation of Harriet Tubman was another one that they had. Straight out of Cotton. Yep.
Because, you know,
escape it fast. Watch yourself.
Oh, my God.
Someone,
I'm sorry, Miss Lashing.
Massa said,
I fucking hate black Twitter right now.
You down with slavery?
I can't stop laughing.
You know me.
Well done.
You gotta laugh.
You gotta laugh.
Mad props.
W.E.B. Du Bois, he's 5/5, wrote, white people keep saying the N-word because of hip-hop, but damn, bruh, rap must have been lit in 1823. That rap game was on fire with the N-word in 1850. When that SAE got formed, fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fire. Yeah, so you could search that. I'll put a link to all of them, but they were quite humorous, let me just say. Black Twitter had some fun with that one. I actually don't even, big pun, I'm not a slave. I just pick a lot. Just saying.
Damn.
I just pick a lot.
Oh,
it's wrong because it's funny and it's ironic, but really what we should be remembering is that the hashtag was for a fucking reason.
Yeah.
Because like an idiot on a morning MSNBC show
made
that goddamn proclamation. And nobody in the studio felt the need to. And in fact, the woman went on the shows afterwards. She went on Al Sharpton's show and tried to like double down on it. Well, if you listen, what we said was, of course, the thing on the bus was egregious. But that being said,
she's like, this needs to be a separate discussion. Yeah, it can be a separate discussion, but not with you, bitch. Not with you.
Exactly. Bitch, you tried it. Bitch, you tried it.
You tried it. Exactly. Ice-T, white power. Mm-hmm. Straight out of the jungle. Jungle Brothers.
Oh.
Yeah. Southern playlist, cotton picking, funky music.
Shit. Oh, no.
And my favorite of all.
Awesome.
The new classic by Iggy Azalea. Thank you very much.
Isn't that the name of her album?
It is the name of her album.
Okay, just checking.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Anyways, Black Twitter, God bless you. Thank you. Thank you, Black Twitter. Yes, shout out to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think we all needed that one.
Yes, we did. Yeah. You are just listening to part one of the Bitch You Tried It episode of Ferguson Response podcast. We had such a wonderful conversation. We actually split this episode into two parts. Again, you can find this wonderful podcast on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Ferguson Response. Or you can go to our website, FergusonResponse.org. You can find me at Leslie Mack on Twitter, Leslie M-A-C. And you can find Ricky at AUA.org or at AUAMovement.org. And our two guests, Tia, you can find at Tia D. Marr, M-A-R-R, on Twitter or Instagram. And you can always find Very White Guy on the Twitter at Very White Guy. Check in a couple of days, actually, for part two of this great episode where we delve into the Black Lives Matter controversy, I should say non-troversy, at Oak Park River Forest High School, the Ferguson resignations, Selma 50 talking about Obama's speech, and the police shooting that happened in Ferguson last week.